So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's currently episode 13. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show about Captain Phasma, because this week it's all about bloodlines. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host Danya.
Hey everyone.
And returning this week, we have Mikhail back.
Hey guys.
As always, if you want to get involved in that conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at R Radio Podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com. So welcome back, everybody.
It's so nice. It's so great to be back again. I love that, just being able to talk about Star Wars every week.
Isn't it wonderful? I love doing it. So a few things to get out of the way before we get into our news. We do have some Indie Pop Con information. Danya, you want to go over that real quick?
Yes. So again, we're going to be there 17th of June to the 19th of June. So if you are in the Indianapolis area and you're interested, check out indiepopcon.com, pick up some tickets. They've got some great guests and you can come by and meet us. We will be at table 344 and 346, I think, are the table numbers, but I'll double check, reconfirm that and put it out on the Twitter account. So that's good. We will be doing a live podcast. We're going to do lots of really fun stuff. I think today it was put up on the schedule that we are going to be doing a Star Wars discussion panel with the Indiana 501st, which is going to be pretty cool. Yeah, and Mikey, would you like to say what we will have at Indie PopCon with us?
So if everything goes according to plan, we'll have some really cool button packs, some different button designs that you can pick up, as well as a really cool Join the Resistance t-shirt. Because, you know, who doesn't want to be part of the Resistance, right?
Yes.
So that's going to be pretty cool. So, Mikhail, welcome back. Any Star Wars things that you've learned along the way since last time you were on?
Oh, gee. Trying to think. Not really, but, like, just kind of increasing in excitement and, like, general, like, oh god, I can't believe this is all still happening.
You know, it was really interesting. The last show you were on the Rebel show with us, when we talked about, like, maybe we'll get a Rogue One trailer, and literally, like, an hour after we finished recording, the Rogue One trailer teaser came out.
It was, right? Yeah.
So it's like, oh my gosh,
that
Rogue One.
Was so good. I, like, flipped out over Mon Mothma. Like,
I know.
Forget so good, everything
right?
else.
Like, she looks identical to Mon Mothma. And obviously, she was the one used in Revenge of the Sith, but oh my gosh, so good.
Yeah, oh my god. And I literally typed it so much that my phone started recognizing Mon Mothma, like, within, like, an hour. It was just Mon Mothma? Yes.
Was it just Mon Mothma, or was it Mon Mothma in all caps? Because that's what my phone is doing.
My phone does it right. Probably. It's just the capital M. Everything else is right.
Oh, I think I'd been capitalizing it, or, like, I'd been typing in all caps for it. There are only now two things on my phone that it automatically puts into all caps. Mon Mothma and Hawkeye. Those are the two things it automatically puts into all caps, no matter how I type it. And anyone who listens to any other podcast I've been on or follows me on Twitter will know I have a minor Hawkeye problem. Is problem the right word?
What's a problem, really?
It's not a problem. Well, it depends on what version of Hawkeye we're talking about. Specifically, Comics 616 Hawkeye is the one that I love. So, a lot. So my phone capitalizes that and Mon Mothma now, because apparently I have a lot of feelings about both.
I want a Mon Mothma book now.
That,
I, like, really do.
That would be so cool. I would love that.
After Bloodlines, I kind of want a Mon Mothma book, just because they talk about her, but you never see her at all.
Yeah.
And, like, I kind of wanted to, like, well, what's going on with her? Like, obviously, she was integral to the whole, Force Awakens, or to the entire Star Wars universe after Return of the Jedi. But we don't really know anything else.
Yeah. And she's really such a unique character, just in terms of, like, being sort of a, a wager of peace, you know? Like, you definitely get that in Aftermath when she's like, we're shutting down the army now, you know? And, and it's, you know, she comes across as such a, like, calm, like, peaceful person, you know, like, incredibly thoughtful, and you just, you see that, and she's leading the rebellion, and then she leads, you know, the New Republic, and I think almost like a time cap, well, just like a general book about her experiences, like, through the war and everything would be so interesting, and, like, to see how, you know, how she came to be in that position, and where, how she gets to that place, and, like, kind of the events of the movie, including Rogue One now, like, from her perspective. I think that would be really cool.
No, yeah, I agree. Like, Mon Mothma is, maybe that'll be a spotlight character coming up soon. Anyway, before we get too deep into a topic that we weren't going to talk about today, let's get into some news and then we'll start talking about Bloodlines. So, news-wise, StarWars.com has introduced a new show, a new kind of web series, if you will, called The Star Wars Show. Just to give you an idea about this, this is about a 5 to 8 minute web series that they've been doing. They currently have 2 episodes out, and it's featuring Andy Gutierrez, who is part of Rebels Recon, and Peter Townley. Have you guys had a chance to take a look at this at all?
I have not, no. This is actually, I feel like a terrible Star Wars fan in that this is the first time I'd heard about it. But then, like, my head has been down, like, the last 2 weeks. I've been, like, absorbed in, like, the fallout from Civil War and the amount of times I have seen that film. And also, like, indie popcorn prep has literally been, like, my life the last 2 weeks. So I'm kind of behind on, like, all news. It's really bad.
I have seen the first episode. I didn't have time yet to watch the second one, but I really liked it. I think it has that fun, like, Rebels Recon is, like, a joy to watch because it's so funny and so kind of irreverent. And I think this show has the same kind of atmosphere to it. And I love Andy. She's so great.
Yeah, I love Andy too.
I mean, I want to be her, but I'd also stand for, like, being her best friend, you know?
No, I will say I really enjoy what they did here. I'm glad that she came out and did something else while we were waiting for Rebel Recon to come back, just because we're in between seasons for Star Wars Rebels. But I will tell you, the Star Wars show is really cool because they kind of go over a lot of the news and stuff. So we're not going to cover the same stuff that they went over in their news. I will say, as a kind of a web series to kind of keep an eye on, something to subscribe to and watch, it's really well done. I will say my favorite part of it, though, has to be their theme song. It's totally,
yes.
It's kind of a techno version of Ray's theme at the beginning, and then it goes right into it. Like, it's really well done.
Seriously?
Yeah.
It's like really unnerving, but also really awesome.
Yeah, and then of course they do the really goofy, like, it's the Star Wars show, and it's like, you know, the Yoda from ILM, and they, you know, dub the mouth to move and stuff like that. So it's really
okay.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. So that you can check that out on the Star Wars YouTube channel, or just go to StarWars.com. You'll see the latest episode. But I will say, the Star Wars show is definitely something worth watching. A quick way to kind of stay up to date on some of the most popular things in the Star Wars fandom, I think, would be something to take a look at.
It's also their first joke was, like the first line of the first show or something is, like, here's the Star Wars show. You know, people may not like episode 1, but by episode 4, we're sure everyone will be on board.
Yeah.
It was like, I love that you are that self-aware.
Yeah, yeah. They don't, like, not realize where the fans come from. I will say, one of the really cool things they talk about in on the Star Wars show, at least on the most recent episode, episode 2, it actually came out, I think, today, the day we're recording. But what's interesting is they talk about Lost Stars, which is totally a tie-in to, you know, it's the same author, Claudia Gray, who did Bloodlines, which we're talking about today. They talk about Lost Stars, specifically Sayana Ray, who is the main character, or one of the main characters in the book. There is now artwork for Sayana Ray, and I will tell you, if you go through the video, take a look at it, I'm sure they're going to post it somewhere else. She looks super sassy, like, I kind of got that from her character. Like, she's all about, you know, if you guys read Lost Stars, I totally got she was all about honor and keeping to it and everything. But the picture of her, she looks like just super sassy. Like, she's like, don't go there. Like, totally, like,
so
don't disrespect me.
I've seen the picture because that came around on my Twitter feed. I didn't realize where it had come. come from. I just saw that people had been like, this is official art of Sienna Ray, and basically this is what she looks like, and doesn't she look awesome? And I was like, they're going, yes, yes, she does look awesome. This is amazing. I absolutely love this. But I didn't realize where it had come from.
Well,
all I saw was that it was official art, and people were retweeting it everywhere.
Yeah, so it's official art. It came out, they announced it, but it's in part of one of the games that are coming out, part of it. So kind of an expansion for it, because all those different ships and everything that were mentioned in Lost Stars is part of the official canon, and those will show up in some of the game expansions and whatnot. So Sienna Ray has official art, and we know what she looks like now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That picture is awesome. It just really kind of freaked me out to see, like, cause she's in a TIE pilot uniform and, like, with, like, an Imperial, like, a, you know, Star Destroyer background or whatever. And it's like, she has this smile on her face, and I'm like, this is weird. Seeing a TIE fighter, A, with a face, and B, like, just like a human, like, smile-ish, you know? It was very strange to see her humanized in that, or to see a TIE pilot, like, in that kind of context. Because, like, it's one thing to read about it and be like, oh yeah, they're TIE pilots, that's cool. And then it's another thing to see it and be like, oh, this character who I like is a TIE pilot.
Yeah. Well, she was a TIE pilot at one point, and she worked her way up to move beyond. And she even talked about staying current with Flying TIE. So, definitely, I will say, Claudia Gray creating the character, you know, Sienna Ray, totally fell in love with her as a character. And Bloodlines itself, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes, definitely did not disappoint, at least not for me. So, next thing we have, some Celebration Europe information. I know Danya's going to be there.
Yeah.
I know. I wish I could be there. But we do have some information about the Star Wars video games. Every single video game is going to be at Celebration Europe. Battlefront, Lego Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Star Wars Commander, Galaxy of Heroes, Star Wars The Old Republic, and Star Wars The Force Collection. So, all these games are going to make an appearance, and we also had news last week talking about Battlefront 2 is coming out in 2017, which EA recently has tweeted also that they actually decided not to put a campaign version in Battlefront 1, the first one. The reason for this was to have it be released around the same time as The Force Awakens. So that was actually a conscious decision that they decided not to put a campaign in it. I think it was also one of those things they realized, like, we'll just put a campaign in the second one and release it a year later. So, but we will see all the games and possibly all the news coming from them at Celebration. So, Dania, you'll have to let us know what happens there.
I will probably be live tweeting. So if I'm, like, at panels and stuff, I tend to, like, live tweet if it's really interesting stuff. So, yeah.
You're cool. Also not allowed to sleep.
Nope, I'm not allowed sleeping to sleep. At all. It might end up having to come to that because it's in London and I'm outside of London by about 45 minutes. And
oh, you're not staying in?
I don't know yet. I was going to be going with a friend, but she is now going to Ghana for a couple of months to do some, like, work out there. And so I am flying solo to Star Wars Celebration now.
I see what you did there. Like, I'm solo, if you didn't get it, people.
So, though it does technically mean I have a couple of tickets for sale, so I'll need to see if anyone else wants to go with me, but for right now, I am not staying in London for it, so I may have to stay awake for 3 days. I'm also terrified by the fact that this is immediately before I have to leave for San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, you're having, like, a crazy summer.
Yeah.
So, like, you're coming here for Indie PopCon, and then you're going back basically for Celebration, and then you're going back, coming back, flying all the way across America to San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah. Then I'm back at the end of the year for New York Comic Con. I'm just waiting I'm just waiting for my press pass to come
through. Just move here already.
I know. But then just before I leave for Indie PopCon, I'm seeing The Cursed Child as well.
Oh, wow. The first preview performances.
You're seeing the first preview?
The first preview.
Oh, jeez, I hate you.
Yeah.
Friendship over.
Anyway, more Celebration news. They also announced Celebration 2017 is in the U.S. in Florida. So that should be a fun thing to look forward to for next summer.
Do you think that it's very purposeful that it's going to be in Florida?
I would hope that they have something like a preview of the park or something.
That's what I was thinking might happen, is that they may have something finished and they may link the two together in some way. Like, that seems like...
Well...
It seems too coincidental. Well,
it either would have been there or Anaheim. I mean, like, it would have been one or the other.
Yeah, well, they did. Yeah. The last U.S. one was in Anaheim. And that's actually what's interesting. I almost wonder if they just did it in Florida because of Disney World, just like they did the last one in Anaheim because of Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And really, I'm almost wondering if they just did it in Florida because last time it was in the U.S., it was in California. One, you know, it's on the West Coast instead of East Coast. So it may... I don't want to look too much into it, but I would love for them to absolutely be like, hey, and since it's part of Celebration, we have a special surprise for all of you. We're going to open up this section of the park just so you guys can see it before everyone else. And it's like maybe one of the rides or two of the rides done. Because that would just be amazing to like be able to see that as a preview even. Because it won't be officially open by that time.
No, it won't. It's 2018 it's officially open, but they keep changing the rough estimate of what time of year it's going to be open. Mm-hmm. And that's a real pain for me because I'm in the middle of planning my 30th birthday for 2018, where I'm going to Disney World, and I kind of need to know when they're going to open the Star Wars park, because that is going to dictate when we're going
there. Now, I can tell you this, at least for Disneyland, not Disney World, but Disneyland, whenever they add in new sections to the park, specifically most recent memory, I'm thinking of Cars Land. For annual pass holders as well as people visiting, they actually opened it probably about 3 to 4 months before it was officially open, so people can just visit it. It was what they considered like a soft opening. So not everything was like everything was done, but like service, and sometimes they had problems with different things, you know. So it wasn't open for the public, if you will, but it was actually open. You can go to it and you can see all of it and take pictures and do all those things.
Yeah, I'm not an annual pass holder.
Public, but I was saying, like, the only reason I knew about it is my mom's still an annual pass holder for Disneyland. Unfortunately, I'm not, because I just don't go enough anymore living in Kentucky. But yeah, so it might be open whenever, just whether it's actually officially open or not, who knows.
Yeah, well...
So that's Celebration news. We also have a video that's kind of gone viral. It's got 61,000 views, if you will, of a lady wearing a Chewbacca mask, a Kohl's customer, trying to talk like Chewbacca. So much so that it actually picked up, went viral on Reddit, and Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca himself, actually commented on it and said it was absolutely wonderful. So
it's so great, though.
It's Chewie approved, if you will.
She's so delighted. Like, if you want to smile, you have to watch this video, because she puts this mask on, this Chewbacca mask, that when you move your mouth on the mask moves as well and makes the Chewbacca noise. And she just bursts into laughter every single time she moves her mouth. So it's kind of half doing a Chewbacca noise and half hysterical laughter. And I just sat here watching the whole thing from start to finish in hysterical laughter myself. Like, if you're looking for a video to, like, cheer yourself up at all, this is definitely one to watch. I thought it was really great. And also, I kind of want one.
So I can't lie, I haven't actually watched it yet, but I saw, obviously I saw it going around, and the first time I saw it, it was right after I woke up, and I did the whole, like, I'm gonna check my phone and see what's going on in the world thing, and I thought it was, like, a Snapchat filter or something that, like, had come out, because it, like, from my, like, supine perspective and, like, sleepiness, it was just, like, the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
Like, I could, because, like, I was playing it without sound, so I could see it, like, moving. I was just like, what is going on? I don't understand.
It's so great, though. It's just, it's really delightful. I think that's the whole thing of it, is that there's just so much joy in this video. So, well, it's great to just watch.
I just pulled it up to, like, the start, where she actually puts the mask on, just so I can reference it directly. she's already so excited that she got this for her son, and she,
no,
she got it for,
she
her,
got
for
it
herself.
For herself.
She got it for herself, knowing that her son's going to confiscate it. And she's going, you know, it's literally just a reaction type video, YouTube video. She's sitting in her car, just picked it up. She's like, I got this for myself. You know, here it is. She puts it on. And of course, it's the one that has the speaker and everything. So it's got the chewy voices and sounds and everything built into it. But the mouth actually moves. And like, she is just... She shows everyone what a true Star Wars fan feels like when they get a new toy. Like, I'm like, yes. I would be doing the same thing. Except I might have my arms in the air, raising them up and forth, you know, back and forth, or, you know, trying to walk around like Chewbacca at the same time instead of sitting in my car. But I really would want to, like, take this to go through, like, a drive-thru.
That would be so funny.
At least, maybe not order with it on, but put it on afterwards. Because, like, I could just, oh, man. But, yeah, she was super excited for it. It's definitely fun to watch. Anything else? Have you had a chance to look at it right now while we were talking, Mikal?
No, not yet, but I will. I will watch it for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely, it improves with the sound on.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can't watch it with the sound off, but she's doing it in the parking lot. She's super excited, and her laugh is just infectious. She's just, like, so happy, and it just makes you, like, this is why we all love each other as Star Wars fans.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no judgment. Everyone does silly things in their cars in the name of fandom. I mean, I know I do. I mean, my life the last couple of months has literally just been, I wouldn't say singing, I would say probably strangled cat shouting to the Hamilton soundtrack every single day. Yeah, we all do ridiculous things in the name of fandom in cars. So, Chewbacca masks, not unusual.
Alrighty. So, any other news? This was kind of a slow news week. Until I think we get some more... I feel like until Celebration, we're going to kind of be held off on some of this, you know, Rogue One information. And obviously... Episode 8 news, we'll probably get more, a significant more about it after Rogue One is done. Anything else that we missed, guys?
Not that I can think of. No.
Okay. Nothing
Aftermath
major.
Is coming out soonish, right?
Yeah. Aftermath 2. Yeah, it should be coming out soon. In fact, there was actually a preview of it in the back of Bloodlines. Did you
it was
guys?
Okay. Yeah. I have complicated feelings about Aftermath.
Same.
I
mean,
without getting into Aftermath, like, the first one took me forever to get through. I'll just be honest with you. Like, the first one took me a long time to get through.
I
listened to it on audiobook, and I was just like, all right.
Yeah, it definitely took me a bit of time to get through it. And I'm really quick at reading. Like, I can devour a book, like, or multiple books in a day, like, no problem. But that one, I just, it just felt like a hard slog. And that's not to say that I didn't think the actual content of what they had there was, like, there was anything wrong with it. I think they had some interesting ideas, and, like, I think the groundwork was there. I just don't think it was executed particularly well.
Yeah, I had a weird experience of, like, really liking, like, Nora and Sinjir, I really enjoyed. I thought they were great characters. But the rest of, like, I liked almost nothing else about the book. Just those characters and, like, their inner monologues. And I actually thought that I was, like, done with Star Wars books after that, because I was like, okay, well, this was the big one, and, like, everybody's like, you have to read this, and I, like, went out and read it, and I was like, this kind of sucked. Not for the reasons that, like, you know, certain people on the internet thought it sucked, but, like, for, you know, reasons of quality that I thought. But then, you know, then Claudia Gray happened, so.
Yes. Bless Claudia Gray.
Bless Claudia Gray, yes, seriously. So, moving into Bloodlines, beyond the fact that we've talked about the artwork and we said it's just absolutely amazing, this book, really, I will say to everyone before, you know, we're going to talk about it, so if you don't want to hear any spoilers, turn it off now. Scan to the last 2 minutes and then hear our recap of it and, you know, us saying goodbye. But seriously, you need to read Bloodlines. It's amazing. It has become an essential read, I think, for everyone who's a Star Wars fan, especially going into Episode 8. What do you guys agree with me on that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's completely, it's essential read. The best part about this is I think it kind of sets up the state of the galaxy. You kind of get to see the state the New Republic is in. You get peeks of, like, what Luke and Ben are doing. You get to find out, you know, what
you get very mean teases.
You get mean, exactly. You get mean teases. But you get an idea of what's actually going on, though, right? Like, you get an idea.
Yeah.
You don't really get to see it. But again, as a state of the galaxy, state of the Republic, you kind of get to see what Ben and Luke are doing. You get to kind of see what Chewbacca is doing. It talks about it. You get to see where Han Solo's kind of up to, what Leia's doing, and the state of the Republic. And I found it really, really interesting that the state of the Republic, it starts off really harsh on the Senate. Basically, Leia's thinking about quitting the Senate and leaving. Nothing is working. The Republic is kind of stalled and being able to get anything done since Mon Mothma had to step down. And really, it comes down to it's a two-party galactic, two-faction party galactic system. That's what it is. The populace and the centrists, right?
Yeah.
I don't have the notes up in front of me. I'm just going right
centrist,
from the book.
Yeah.
Centrist, yeah. So it's a two-party system, and they're very, very different. What do you got?
What does that sound like?
I know, right? It's not mirroring anything we see today. So what do you guys think about this, just the fact that the Star Wars universe has a two-party system and the way it's set up? Like, what do you guys think of the populace, like, as a party?
Well, I always kind of thought, especially coming off of, like, when I was rewatching the prequels in preparation for, Force Awakens, I was like, man, governing a whole galaxy with one governing body is a really dumb idea. It's just stupid. It doesn't make sense. It's too big. And then, like, but that was kind of what the system of government was, and like on both ends of the scale, like before and after the Empire. And so it was really interesting to see how that kind of like the hopes for it, but also kind of the hard reality of, like, in a lot of ways this doesn't work. And while I thought maybe, I don't know, I guess maybe I thought the divisions were a little arbitrary at first, but they really kind of, they do, like, Claudia Gray really does back up, like, what she's set up with this, with these political differences, I guess, and kind of the way people, because they're really both responses to the idea that, like, the galaxy is too big to govern under one body, so either you do it under more totalitarian means, and, like, I'm saying that as, like, a neutral word with more control, or you do it with much less control. And I thought it was really cool the way those things kind of combined. And it's also kind of a contrast to American politics, because, like, what we would think of as, like, Democrats, so, like, you know, like Leia is not aligned with Democrats, right? Because she's for a smaller central government, and Democrats are for, like, a larger, more involved central government. So that's, but then, like, you also have the populists who want, like, more, like, military power, which would be sort of Republican. So I like the way it was kind of combined, and kind of there really wasn't, like, a direct analogy, kind of more just in the structure of things.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. And, like, it was nice to see that the populist view, for those of you who have not read the book and are listening, the populist view is a smaller government, because each planet should kind of govern themselves, but a reach from the Republic as a whole to be able to help safeguard, protect, and maybe just kind of like what different countries do to help bail out countries, whether it be after, like, a mass, something would happen, like, in this case, like, for us, we have, like, a mass earthquake or something like that, aid from, like, the UN or something like that would be something that you can compare it to here. So it would be a government, New Republic would go to a planet, help them out. We see, actually, the Senate actually does do something to look into the concerns of a specific planet that we'll talk about in a minute.
Though, funnily enough, that planet was not part of the Republic, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, so planets have the ability to be part of it if they want and not part of it. So it's interesting that the populist view is kind of give the planets themselves their own control, because they probably can govern it themselves, whereas the centrist view kind of almost wishes for the Empire of old to return without the so-called corruption of the Emperor himself. At least that's what we see from the main character, who is a centrist. He admires certain things of the Empire, which with myself playing devil's advocate a lot, I do see the benefits of one empire, if you will. You know, you see it in even Revenge of the Sith, where, you know, Anakin's like, then someone should make these decisions if they're constantly bickering, like, it should just be done. But then, you know, Padme even argues, like, but then who would have such power? How do we know who gets that power? So it's definitely a contrast of views of how they think the galaxy should be ruled. And obviously, this sows the seeds of both the Resistance, and we get alluded to the First Order, which we'll talk about in a bit. So, anything you want to input about that real quick, about the state of the Republic, Danya? Because I know we haven't heard from you.
I just thought it was a really interesting way to kind of set up what we saw in The Force Awakens. Like, it was always, like, this kind of question overhanging, like, how did everything fracture so much after the original trilogy to get us to the point that we're at with The Force Awakens? And this just highlighted exactly what had kind of gone on in order to get us to that point. And it was really, really well done because, like, there were very strong, compelling arguments on both sides. And it was just really interesting. Like, this was a blending of politics and character-driven stuff, as well as, like, the sci-fi aspects that I almost wish that the prequel trilogy had managed to balance as well.
I agree 100%. If the prequels dealt with politics the way this book did, I would have enjoyed it a whole lot more.
Yeah.
This book was amazing. Like, I honestly couldn't put it down. It was so good.
Like, the thing is that I don't necessarily... I will say this for the prequel trilogy. I don't dislike that they brought politics into it as heavily as they did, but it wasn't executed in any way that was compelling. So it just became a lot of walking around in giant empty rooms and talking about things. And there just wasn't any, like, substance there that made it really interesting. Whereas this book had so much balance they balanced the actual political stuff with almost action as well. So it made it so much more compelling. So I have so much respect for Claudia Gray, like, making politics in Star Wars incredibly interesting and making me want to know more about how the politics of the Star Wars universe works. Like, I want more. Basically, I got to the end of the book and I was like, I need more. Give me more politics.
I think the interesting thing about that is that it's not, and I've been listening to a couple of, like, podcast reviews about Bloodline, and people really like it, obviously. But, you know, they're kind of like, see, like, politics works in Star Wars. And, like, I agree, politics does work in Star Wars. But what we're talking about is really not politics. Like, that was the big thing about The Force Awakens. Like, oh no, we don't want politics in The Force Awakens because that's too much like the prequels. And then people were like, oh, it needed more politics, you know, which it did. But what it needs is not politics per se. It's world building. And that's what is, you know, world building content, like that kind of context for the story. And that's exactly what you get in Bloodline. Because it's not like George, bless him, treated the politics like the point. The point is not the politics in Bloodline. The point is the context and the way it affects the characters.
And so it's the immersion to it. It's you being able to relate to it and be immersed inside that world and believe that the world actually exists.
Exactly. And I think that kind of like it's sort of a moot point to be like politics are good or politics are bad in a Star Wars story, because that is completely not what's going on. It's the right kind of background and context and building for a story that really has nothing to do with, you know, you would have to do for any element. It's just that that's harder to do sometimes when it's like politics, because that's very verbal and kind of conceptual as opposed to like an action scene. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. So let's talk a little bit about what we learned about in the movie, or not movie, in the book about Leia's
life. It felt a little like a movie.
It felt like a movie. I would totally be able to watch this like as a movie. It was good. But let's talk about what we learned about Leia's life. So we learn about her relationship with Han Solo. So obviously they are married, and this takes place 20 years after the end of Endor, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
So, yes. Okay, this is actually one of my problems with the book, because people are saying, like, in a vague kind of way, like, oh, it's, like, 6 years before The Force Awakens, and I'm like, I don't accept that, because that completely messes up my Rey timeline, and my Kylo Ren timeline, so I'm like, no, this takes place, like, 10 years before, or, like, 12 years before. That's just my personal thing, because there's nothing in the book that actually gives us an actual time thing, so they can change whatever they're saying about, like, 6 years before The Force Awakens, like, that's changeable. To me. And I feel like that's very kind of like un-Star Wars-y, because it's like very fact-based and very like, you know, no, this is the canon. And I'm just like, but there's like no official like indication in the actual canon, which is the book. So that's a long thing.
Are you 100% sure? Because I feel like she makes reference to it's been this many years since the end of Endor and the start of the New Republic. Like, I think Leia
could
says
be.
It.
I did read this book over a couple of weeks, so I could have forgotten that.
See, now I wish I missed my highlight. I only hit highlighted so many things in it, and I'm trying to flip through it. But I want to say it takes place at the end of what would be Leia. Like, she's kind of at the point of Rey to retire, if you will. So I want to say 20 years, if I remember correctly. But I could be wrong. I could totally be wrong.
Well, so, I think I remember... So, Ben is 23 in this, isn't he?
Is he?
That I don't know, remember reading at all, anywhere. But anyway, regardless, it takes place... Not right after Return of the Jedi, and definitely not right before Revenge of for The Force Awakens. Jeez, I'm all over the place with the different titles today. So it definitely is like dead smack in the middle, if you would almost think about it this way. But it does give us the beginnings of it. So looking at Leia's life, Han and her are living separate. Not for any bad reasons, but purely for the fact that she is... a senator in the New Republic, and she's doing that. And if you can imagine Han Solo being at home, being, you know, a dutiful husband, just sitting there waiting to make dinner for her when she gets off of work, you probably don't know Han Solo. So, of course, he is
and
willing...
And vice versa.
And vice versa. You can't imagine her doing the same thing, like, you know, making him dinner every night. So, like, she's doing what she has always done since the age of 14. And Han Solo, the same thing. They have a great relationship. But they are living separate because he is off doing racing, and he's kind of gone legit. He's no longer smuggling, if you will, which is good. So they have this relationship, and they communicate. You know, they make phone calls. It's a long distance relationship. Ben is off with Luke training, right? And so Leia doesn't see Ben very often, and Chewbacca is back home on Kashyyyk. So even Han and Chewie aren't hanging out as much anymore, which. I found that very interesting, like that Chewbacca has started to settle down. What do you guys think about that information about Chewie, Han, Ben, and Luke?
I mean, I thought it was quite interesting that... because obviously we see Han and Chewbacca together in The Force Awakens, and they're still as close as ever, so I guess the assumption would have been that they'd like stayed together throughout... But knowing that Chewbacca has kind of, like, gone home to settle down kind of thing, and that they weren't together as much, like, that was something that I wasn't expecting. But also adds another, like, interesting question to it, like, what was it that drove them back together again? Was it Ben becoming Kylo? That kind of brought them back together again? Was it everything that happens with the Jedi Academy and the Knights of Ren basically wiping out all of the Jedi? Like, what is it that drives them back together again?
I was just going to agree with you. It's one of those things where it's interesting to see if Chewie has gone home and started to relax. If you say he's in retirement, you know, he's 200 plus years old at this point. And then what drives him to go back with Han? At this point in the book, it sounds like he doesn't have the Millennium Falcon anymore. And based on what we find out in The Force Awakens, it was stolen from him, and it was stolen, you know, passed along a couple times. So at this point, Han doesn't sound too stressed about recovering the Falcon. And Chewie has kind of settled down. So it's really interesting to see what pushes them to continue to look for it and go back together for it. Because it's also when the relationship between Leia and Han is strained that Han is back with Chewie. So there's definitely a catalyst there, and I'd love to see that show up in future books, possibly penned by Claudia Gray. Go ahead, Mikal.
Yeah, I also think, you know, it's really interesting because I honestly I'm not as interested in, like, where's Chewie, but it was interested. It was interesting to see that he wasn't, you know, directly involved in their lives anymore. And that was such a cute moment when he calls her after the bombing. That was, like, adorable. But I personally was most interested by the way Han and Leia's marriage was presented, because I thought it was really cool, and it kind of occurred to me that I always maybe sort of thought that that was how their marriage would work. Like, not like it's not at all a reflection of their love for each other, you know. And I think that they probably did have years where they were together, you know, probably like when Ben was little, there was maybe more living on Hosnian Prime or whatever, you know. But I really like the idea that they can do their separate things and not have it be a reflection on, like, on their relationship, on their love for each other. Like, there's no, I think a lot of people after The Force Awakens maybe were more bitter about how their relationship had worked out. But to me, this was a really beautiful kind of, reinforcement of the idea that, like, no, they're totally in love, and they're, like, they're actually awesome for each other, but, like, they've just managed to figure out how to make that work with their own personalities. And I thought that was really affirming and, like, just awesome. I wanted more flashbacks, though. Like, Leia has a moment where she remembers, like, baby Ben, and, like, and I wanted more of that. Like, I know this book is, like, about Leia, and that's awesome and, like, empowering and stuff, but oh my god, I really wanted some, like maybe just like two or three more moments where she was like, Ben used to play on this couch, or, you know, I remember when Ben threw a tantrum, or like something like that, you know.
Did he ever stop throwing tantrums?
I know, right? Oh, that time Ben didn't throw a tantrum. Like, you
know. Just that one time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. We get really a peek at Leia's life. But the story as a whole, obviously revolves around not necessarily politics and what they're brought into, but Leia as a senator answers the call of somebody who is also introduced in Claudia Gray's other book. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he was an X-Wing pilot in Lost Stars. He was a Twi'lek, and basically from his planet, he is saying they are being overrun by the Nyctos and basically gangsters that took over for the Hutts. And so he asks for the Republic's help, and Leia stands up and says, I'm going to go ahead and do an exploratory mission. Basically, when she gets up there, I really felt like episode one. It kind of like what Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were doing, kind of finding out about, is there really a blockade above Naboo? I kind of felt like that, but it was done in such a better way that made me really kind of really want to read further into it. What do you guys see about similarities on how the story starts out that way?
I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. I think, you know, it is more interesting here. I think it's just like a very, you know, it's kind of very typical Star Wars where it's like, you think it's like this small thing, you know, and then it turns out to be like, obviously enormous and having links to, all these major issues, which obviously it was going to because it's a book that's being written for a reason. But yeah, no, I liked it a lot. Although I still am a little confused about why Ryloth is like, help us, you have to help us, but we're not part of the Republic though.
Yeah, they do get into that a little bit, but it's kind of like in passing. So Ryloth, that's the planet they were was asking for help, the Twi'lek panic. And basically they go into it saying that Ryloth is just really poor and they're trying to recover from all the abuse they received from the Hutts and the Empire. And so it's interesting to see that the Republic is even going to help a planet who's not part of the Republic, maybe in the hopes of having them join later on. But basically the way the story works out is Leia goes ahead and says, I'm going to go on this mission to investigate what they've said. And a Centaurus, name, was it Ransholm? Is that how you would pronounce it, I guess? Ransholm says he's going to go with her, who is on the opposite faction. And we get introduced to him. And so they start an investigation. into essentially a crime lord. It kind of reminded me, because they even talked about her at, you know, when they went after Han Solo when he was frozen carbonite with Jabba the Hutt. It was kind of interesting to see her kind of go to a casino type place and everything, and just kind of that experience there. In fact, one of my favorite lines when they start to do this investigation is, you know, Leia is playing a game of Sabacc there, and she just is winning nonstop. And people are like, "Really? How do you win?" She's like, you know, in her mind, she's like, "Few Sabacc players have learned the game from Han Solo." And one of my favorite characters, Lando Calrissian. It was just, it was great to me to just see all that kind of being tied together of like her character picking up these traits from probably not the most senatorial type people, if you will. But it was great to have something like that. So she goes to the planet, they learn a bunch of stuff, and it just becomes this big conspiracy to find, you know, money is being funneled around. This is a low-level guy who's now made a ridiculous amount. He's funding money to a military that may or may not have aspirations to do something more, which you can guess what it's probably alluding to. So much so that this military group eventually, without anyone knowing it's them for sure, bombs the Senate. So there's cast, you know, doubt and just rumors going back and forth. And it's really interesting to see just like the inner fighting of the Republic Senate, and just seeing how Leia has to kind of dodge all those things, with it being kind of almost like, if you would, like action, but still being political. So it was really, the story kind of moves along that way. Anything you guys want to put in there before we move on with the story?
One of the other things that I really liked from this was that it wasn't Leia's title as princess or senator that kind of gave her this really powerful name amongst those people. It was the fact that she was known as a Hutt Slayer. So for killing Jabba the Hutt, that's basically the title that kind of gave her more weight as a person to be investigating this, which I thought was kind of really cool.
You know, I'll agree with you on that. And I also like that there was actually, she hadn't thought, like when it was brought up as her as the Hutt Slayer, she hadn't thought about that in, you know, the time. I think maybe that's where they talked about when she last thought about it. It was probably 20 years ago. Maybe that's where the line was, but she hadn't thought about it in so long, and she was actually re-seeing it. So obviously we saw it in the films and everything, mm-hmm. what she did and everything. And it was interesting. She's like, she looked at it and the person she was talking to was not ashamed. And she actually just was like, "I agree. Like, this is what I had to do." And she kind of made light of the fact that she performed technically murder. You know, it was like, you know, like, because like, think about it. She killed Jabba the Hutt. Now, when we think about, like,
that's not murder.
When we think of morality, she did kill someone. Now, again, you have to think about the Repel, you know, they're in a time of war and things like that. So things kind of get swept under. But it's interesting that she looks at it and she's not ashamed of it. And she actually even shares this with someone who became her close friend. And they didn't think anything bad about it, even though she even in her mind is like, "I wonder if they'll take this as me committing murder," versus what she was actually doing. Again, she was a slave at the time. She was trying to free herself.
Just liberating herself
in lots of different ways. So yeah, so again, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate, but it's a really cool part is the book actually kind of alludes to a lot of this and kind of talks about it. So it's like, it allows you to see the different perspectives in this universe. So it's not just black or white on a lot of things. So I will agree, the Hutt Slayer is definitely a title of respect, if you will, for her. Okay. So, moving on. There's a bombing in the Senate. Luckily, no one is hurt.
Oh, wait. Can we talk about Ransom first?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and pick up.
Yeah, I just think he's, like, he's a really cool character. I really like the way Claudia Gray kind of builds him into this, like, you know, at the start of the book, you think he's, like, terrible and the worst and, like, go away. And then just the way she handles that and kind of builds him into this kind of, like, somebody first that, like, Leia begrudgingly respects and then somebody who she actually, like, cares about. I thought that was just really masterfully done and just, like, good writing, good characterization. And I really liked the way they were kind of put on this kind of collision course, you know, within the story, that they were kind of going to have this revelation that eventually comes. And I also, well, I'll talk about it at the end, but
No, just keep going. Just keep going. I don't want to break the thought process.
Okay, so... So the at the end of the story, you know, he's like being when he's framed for all the bad stuff that's gone on, and when he said like and they said like, oh, he's being sent back to Ryosa, and I started laughing because earlier in the book it's like he's like, yeah, I just managed to get the death penalty passed again on Ryosa.
Even comments it in the book too. He's like, I wish I didn't get it just passed again, because
I know he's like, yeah, that was my bad. It's like, yeah it is.
Well, you know, it happens. So all right, let's talk about the story arc, the character. I guess there's so many things to talk about in this book, and I want to focus on a few of them, but let's talk about the character arc real quick. So Leia's relationship with Ransom was really interesting, because when the book started out, she made a comment at the very beginning saying she can just see him in an Imperial officer outfit. Like, Ransom just kind of has this love. He's obviously a senator. He has this love for the Empire, not for Palpatine or Vader, but a love for the order and the structure and almost the military might, if you will. Like, he has a collection of stormtrooper, TIE pilot helmets, and part of one of the missions, he goes undercover to acquire additional memorabilia from the Empire, which is a Royal Imperial Guard, you know, the red helmet, and he purchases that. So it's interesting that, like, her initial opinion of him is someone she would have been on he would have been on the wrong side of the war, if you will. Even though he has a hate for Palpatine and Vader.
Yeah. But the other thing about that was really interesting was the fact that there's a market for, like, Imperial relics. Like, items throughout, like, the Empire that are now basically war memorabilia of sorts. And it kind of could be how things like Darth Vader's helmet got into the hands of Ben eventually, if, like, there is this market for it, which I thought was quite fascinating in a way, like, morbidly fascinating that these relics of war are being traded and sold off in, like, this kind of underground market, you know, sort of thing. Like,
I feel like it's the same thing with, like, Nazi memorabilia. You know, yeah, like, it's like, where it's like, you know,
I wasn't
honestly
gonna bring up the Nazis,
but it's really, that's what it is. It's something that's, they perform something so heinous. Like, when you look at the Empire, like, I just can't imagine, like, I understand where Ransom was coming from, but when you look at what they did, they destroyed an entire planet for the sake of showing military might. That is beyond, that's an entire planet. Like, in real life, I can't even fathom, like, can you imagine just killing everyone on our planet? Like, that is beyond heinous, right? Just to prove a single point. The same thing, the Nazis did something beyond unimaginable. Obviously, it happened, and it's unforgivable and those types of things. So those people who want to collect it, they have to be coming from an interesting place. So it really sets up Ransom as a very kind of interesting character. Like, can he ever gain Leia's trust? You know what I mean? Like, without saying anything, you know, obviously I think Nazis are bad, and I'm gonna just put that out there, and I don't want anyone to dive deeper into that, but just, like, it's really interesting to see this character become someone that I started to root for, just knowing how he loved the Empire. Do you guys get what I'm going for with that, or no?
Well, I think what's interesting with him is that, you know, I think Leia kind of goes through a journey of obviously first thinking that this is just the worst thing that anyone can do and that it's unforgivable, to kind of understanding it, or why he's interested in it. But then I think the note that it ends on is that it's very naive, ultimately, of him, you know, because I think that Claudia Gray actually is saying that there kind of isn't a neutral here. Like Ransom is set up by the people who do want to bring back the Empire, you know, and that's what leads to his downfall. And he is, like, for all that he kind of tries to sort of have it both ways, and I don't mean that in a negative way specifically, but he definitely thinks that he can reconcile things that Leia does not believe can be reconciled. And I think the point of that is, I think Leia comes out more
more to the right in the end, like that there is a certain amount of not culpability, but I guess residual evil that sticks with these things, which is an idea in Star Wars anyway, right? That like dark side things have like dark side power and like can corrupt you and all that. You know, I feel like Ben might be like a small instance of that, just like with his obsession with Vader's helmet and like, not that that's corrupting him, but that he's like allowing it to interest him, you know, and intrigue him. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that like kind of it, Ransom's interest in these relics kind of takes an interesting arc through the book from like kind of very bad to sort of neutral to like almost bitter and awful, because it's super interesting because Ransom hates Vader and Palpatine, right? Like he hates them. He really is like anti, like he would be like, he's like a guy who's like, the Nazis had the right idea, just not Hitler. Hitler's the worst. You
know? That's I guess that's probably what I was trying to get to, is like, he liked the Nazis, but not Hitler. He liked right. the Empire, but not super Palpatine naive. And Vader.
That's a like, super naive point of view, right? We would, nowadays, we would be like, that's ridiculous. You can't have one without the other. And like, so I think that's what we're kind of supposed to come away with.
Yeah.
For and, Ransom.
Well, I think it's also like, he liked the idea of it. Like, communism on paper makes sense to an extent, but in practicality, it just never works out. Why? Because you can't give one person that much power, ever. There has to be checks and balances to make sure that nothing, you know, what the Empire in Star Wars doesn't become, right? So I think, and that's the super naive view from him. And it's interesting because he really wants, you know, as a centrist, that's what like half the planets want. They want one strong power to rule over all of them. They want the Empire's might back, but not the corruption of the Emperor. But regardless,
they want to have it both ways.
They want to have it both ways, where it's like, I think, I don't want to say like, the populace are 100% right, because I agree. I get each planet probably knows what's best for each planet, but it needs to be like a balance between the two. And the fact that there's no conversation between either side, really, and this book gets into that, plus the journey of Ransom, where, just to give you guys an idea, is Leia starts to respect him. Like, he really is idealist, even though she doesn't agree with his views, which, again, are that, you know, that strong government controlling. And he doesn't like Vader and Palpatine, you know, she sees that he actually genuinely wants to make a difference, and he believes in these views, and he's willing to kind of make almost compromises, meet in the middle, which Leia sees is the only way that the Senate is going to move on and actually not be stagnant, like we talked about at the very beginning. So they start to respect each other, so much so that they share pretty intimate things. So the reason we know Ransom hates Vader and Palpatine is Ransom actually met Darth Vader as a young child. His parents were actually killed by Vader being forced to, was it mine something or specific? I don't remember the exact details, but his parents were essentially forced into labor, slave labor, well, by Vader, and his parents died because of it. And he was lucky enough to survive, but he obviously has a hate for the person who essentially killed his parents. Do you guys have any takes on that story that Ransom told?
It was complicated. It was like, you know, it was like, I don't know what to do with this kid, you know? What do you say to someone who has experienced like that kind of horror, but who also is like, who also tries to support the ideas behind it? Like, it's a really interesting and confusing and complicated, like, kind of combination of circumstances, you know? And I thought that it was a really touching thing when he and Leia kind of, when he shared that with Leia, and Leia's like, I have the secret that I can't tell you, you know? And I was really curious, you know?
She did tell him, you know, when he told her that experience, she revealed the experience of her being on the Death Star, being tortured by Vader. So she did tell him some things. And actually, it's interesting because she told him something that at the time when she was tortured on the Death Star by Vader, due to Tarkin's orders, she wanted to die. She was literally tortured by her father. And, you know, at the time, she didn't know it was her father. And then she watched her planet be destroyed. You know, again, we're talking about millions of people being killed in an instant. and you being forced to watch. And these are people you loved, your parents and everything there. So she opens up and talks to him. But even after this relationship of kind of growing between the two of them grows, Ransom is kind of manipulated, if you will, and given some information about Leia's parentage. And, you know, his reaction, I think, is something that it's something I understand. And even in the end of the book, Leia understood it. You know, he has this hate for Vader, and he comes to find out the person that he has become so close to in this short period of time is actually the daughter of Darth Vader, the person who killed his parents and put him through so much. And she's pretending like, you know, she didn't tell him, she didn't tell anyone. And she's pretending that it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And she, you know, he feels like she might be trying to manipulate not only him, but the rest of the Senate. And to make matters worse,
he thinks she's Vader come again. I mean, like, I know. That's instantly where he goes to.
And to make things worse, the Senate has just put forth the idea of the first senator, which I feel like is like a new chancellor type thing, or someone who has some power, like a chancellor with emergency power, but not like the ability to literally become a Palpatine again. At least that's what I see it as. They don't really go into too much detail of what a first senator would be. But Leia has just been nominated as the populist choice for first senator. And now Ransom has found out that she is literally the daughter of Vader, and could she be manipulating him and the rest of the Senate to be essentially another Vader, another Palpatine? So he then tells everyone who she actually is, and that plays out really interesting. What do you guys think about how that played out?
I thought that this was really interesting, because it wasn't necessarily that people didn't know who her real parents were. It was more that they didn't know who Anakin actually was. Like, that was the way the reveal came out. Like, I thought that was really interesting. But just in general, it's kind of this really interesting view of it, that everything that Leia has done and stood for, the way that she was brought up by Bail Organa and on Alderaan, and everything that she did and everything she continued to do after the fall of the Empire, it becomes increasingly more complicated and almost eliminated by the fact that Anakin's true identity is that of Darth Vader. And it's kind of like, it's a really complicated thing to look at, because I think in respect to the secret coming out, this way it's handled a lot better than like in the Legends, in the expanded universe, because the thing is something like this would be complicated. You kind of, knowing who her father was is going to color your opinion of her. So as much as I disagree with people basically like turning on her and not taking her at face value of everything that she achieved, it was also really interesting because it was a very human reaction to it, because, you know, Vader did some really terrible, terrible things, and not everyone is privy to everything that we saw as well. And it just, I thought it was just so fascinating, just the way that it was approached. I'm still in awe at this book and everything that it did.
The biggest thing I take away from it is it's interesting how she really hasn't reconciled with her father being Vader. Yes. Whereas Luke has, because again, Luke has the memory of, in Return of the Jedi, he says, I felt, you know, he accepted that Vader is his father and he went to seek him out, which is how he completed his Jedi train. He also recognized that there was good in him and he refused to kill his father or the Emperor, you know, to strike him down and take that step towards the dark side. So Luke really was a beacon of light, and he was able to convince his father to, you know, if you take Kylo Ren's words out of context, like the light, he feels that it pulls to him. Literally, Luke was the light for Vader to pull Anakin Skywalker back. And he literally reconciles with Anakin Skywalker being good at the end of his life and redeeming himself. You know, at the end, it's a redemption story. And we take it at face value. But Leia didn't know that version of Vader. She only knew the person, her father, who literally tortured her within inches of death. Which, it's really sadistic. Like, thinking about, like, this is how her and her father interacted. Like, those are the only memories of her birth father. You know, like that. But you're right. It wasn't really just so much that she came out as being the daughter of Anakin Skywalker. People knew that. But the secret that Anakin Skywalker is the one who became Darth Vader. And they do shed some light that maybe he, you know, maybe he became the way he is out of something really, really good. You know, there's a line in there where Leia wanted to hit somebody or do something. And she's like, I would have wanted to do that, but I couldn't. It was actually at the very end when Ransom was being taken away. After he's framed, after he's literally destroyed her credibility, he's being framed for all the bad stuff that happened, which we know is going to be Snoke in the First Order. But he's being taken away, and Leia wanted to free him, wanted to take him away. And she knows, like, even if she did that, because it would have been, from a certain point of view, seen as right, that would lead her down the dark side. You know, because she would be acting out emotionally, and she's wondering if that's how Anakin Skywalker turned the way he did.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I love that it was kind of presented in this really complicated way where, you know, it's like, that's great for you, Luke, but, like, Leia's kind of, I mean, because I personally also am sort of like, on the whole, like, Vader redeeming himself thing. I'm like, one good thing does not, you know, an Alderaan bring back or whatever. That's just, like, my personal opinion, but I really liked that she was kind of, at any time she had to think about Alderaan or about Vader or about anything, any part of that, it was like this hugely traumatic thing for her that was still, like, she has a couple of times where she's like, I can't think about Alderaan or I can't think about it or I will never stop crying. I will never get out of bed. And like the combination of that, you know, with like the combination of the things that she suffered at Vader's hands with the reality of who she is such a really interesting and complicated thing that I never read the EU. So, but to me, like seeing it treated with that kind of level of complexity, because right, like it's true. Like if somebody was like, by the way, I'm like Hitler's kid, but like I'm running for Senate and I'd be awesome at this. And like I've fought against him my whole life. I'd probably still be like, not sure I'm going to vote for you. I'm sure you're a great person, but I'm not sure I'm going to vote for you.
Exactly, right? It's really kind of like, you know, the sins of the father. Do they have an effect on her? Especially since you know how much Leia's fought against all of that for so long. It's completely like when this is dropped, and this bombshell is dropped, her entire reputation is just slammed in a heartbeat. Wow.
It destroys everything. Everything is destroyed, and it is such a powerful, I mean, I thought that scene where Ransom reveal, I thought that whole section of the book was just like dynamite, like where Ransom reveals it to the Senate. And when, you know, she's reacting to this and trying to get some kind of like sense and like survival out of this disaster. And, you know, I love the line that she says, like, do you know what it's like to have your only memory of your father being the knowledge of how much he enjoyed hurting you? And like, That is, it kind of shows how strong she is. Like, I think the novel shows how strong she is in a lot of different ways, but I think to be able to move on from that kind of understanding on top of having the memory of Alderaan and like being held by Vader in that moment is like just a colossal amount of mental strength. And I think to me, like, it really makes sense kind of seeing how Ben was raised, that like, you know, if there were like flaws in Han and Leia's parenting, that it could be seen as like a direct result of these deep physical and emotional scars that they have from Vader and from fighting the Emperor. And like, I think that, you know,
when you view Star Wars solely through the lens of Luke, a lot of this is maybe lost, or not as evident. But when you kind of step back and put yourself in Leia's shoes, it really takes on this additional significance and understanding that is really beautiful and really important. And I think something that, the new incarnation, I'm really honestly, like, really grateful that, like, The Force Awakens and that this book and all of these things are kind of working together to give us that extra perspective of just, like, it's not that easy, you know, it's not that easy to forgive, it's not that easy to move on, it's not that easy to become someone who is unmarked by this, because, like, and that, you know, and even we see, like, we see why Ransom reveals this, and we also see, I mean, I'm assuming that that reveal, that Ben finding this out somehow, is at least part of his fall, right?
Oh, I'm sure it is. Because she, you know, she never got to reveal it to him, and it's just revealed through, like, whispers, and it's going to be all over the media and everything. It's going to be on, you know, Ben's going to check his Twitter account, and guess what? It's like, hashtag you're related to Vader, sucker! Yeah. You know, it's going to be like, wow.
His mentions exploded, and it's just like, did you know? Did you know? Did you know? And, like, yeah, I can't imagine that kind of trauma, especially, you know, if he is pulled to the dark side. And I like that, because people have kind of, like, JJ and stuff, like, they've indicated that, like, Han and Leia were not maybe the best parents. But I really like this idea of, like, the reason they weren't, and I've seen people be like, okay, but how could she not tell Ben? And I'm like, I don't know if I would. I don't know if I could bear to revisit that, to explain it, to put it into words. It's like, something, sure, you have an intention of doing, but, like, everyone is dead. Like, I could really see that being like, I'm leaving this in the past. Your grandfather's Bail Organa. My father was Bail Organa. Like, I'm not.
And just burying it in the past, like, dark exactly. secret. Yeah. Like, and here's the thing is, like, there's only a handful of people that knew, and it literally never surfaced until this moment in time. And yeah, the only reason it surfaced was.
Unless Lady Kreese hadn't been just such a, you know.
Well, at the same time, it wouldn't have if she actually had just taken her rightful place on the planet as, you know, the, whatever is this, the not the princess governor of this planet, the governor of a planet. So Leia literally just, like, passed over her titleship to somebody else, and that's kind of how they got this information. So
Well, that was also a really great moment, I think, where Carice was like, oh yeah, you have to do it, and, like, and then, you know, after you die, your son will take over, and, like, you don't really get an image of Ben, but you can sort of see an image of Ben, like, raise in Leia's mind and be like, that's not happening.
Yeah. Like, she's like, nope. She can only imagine with, like, a crown and a scepter or something. Just like, yeah. Not so much.
Yeah.
Anyway, I know we need to wrap it up soon, but I do want to quickly mention some of the other characters we're introduced to. We're introduced into Cor, who we see briefly in Force Awakens. Right?
Yeah. Right before.
Very briefly, we see the last, like, 5 seconds of her life, basically.
There we go. So we see her a little bit. We're introduced to Greer. Which I thought was really cool just to see this character evolve. And one of my favorites was Joff Sea Striker. I like the naming, right? Sea Striker was my favorite part of it. So we'll obviously maybe talk about them more in character spotlights. But last thing to end on, guys, what was your favorite part of the book? If you had to pick just one part of the book, God. Anya, Mikhail, what was your favorite thing to take out of it?
For me, it's definitely, I think it might be the conversation, because it's the part that I flip back to, the conversation between Leia and Ransom, like, right after, when she goes to confront him, and she's like, you are, you know, like, you're not even treating me like a person, you know, and, like, you get that he obviously thinks that she is a liar, and that the Leia that he knew was not real, but, like, but obviously that's so false, and her anger and her, like, kind of, I don't know, like, indignation about it. Like, how could you treat me like this? Like, forget, like, politics. Just how could you treat another person this way? I thought was so strong, and yeah. And then also that memory of Baby Ben.
There is so much in this book that is so good. Like, there's, like, the bit about why she didn't become a Jedi, and then there's other bits, like, just so much, like, her finding out about Padme, and then looking up Padme's stuff, and it's just, there's, like, so many little bits in here that are really interesting, like, finding out about what Luke did, like, straight after the original trilogy, like, how people view Luke as well, and what Luke's been up to. Like, there's just so much that's really, really interesting, but I was saying before we started recording, there was one moment that I just found absolutely hysterically funny, and I don't know if it would be, like, my favorite part, but it's the part that, like, I'll stop, and I'll be thinking, and I'll just remember it and start giggling. But, like, for as much as Han and Leia, like, lived apart from each other, they love each other, and this is the way that it works for them, but on the occasions where they actually lived together, Han just leaves his socks everywhere. And I just really love that little insight into their relationship, but I just found it absolutely hysterical. I still get the giggles just thinking about it, because he would leave his socks everywhere. He would. Pick up your socks, Han.
You know, here's the thing. Socks are contention with me, because when I take them off, like, I don't know how you guys take socks off, but I just step on the toe of one and I pull my feet out of them and I just kind of leave them where I take them off at.
What?
My wife hates it.
What the hell, Mikey?
I pick them up eventually because I have to do laundry, but, like, they're right there by the side of the bed. I take them off. I kind of like to sleep with socks on, so I'll have socks on all day and shoes, and I just literally, like, I don't actually take them off. I just step on the toe. Like, right now, I'm with socks on. I'm actually pulling my feet out of socks right now. I'm stepping on the toe.
God.
I pull the foot out, and they're probably going to sit under my computer desk for... Only tonight, I'm going to put them up in the laundry, but, you know, it will sit there for a while, because it's like, eh, whatever, they're there.
A generation of men who wanted to be Han Solo are now like, yeah!
I will say, besides the socks, which is pretty cool, because I'm like, see, even Han does it. That'll be my argument from now on about my socks all over the place. It is probably, I will be honest, it is the very last chapter, towards the very end, when we see the beginning of the resistance. Just one of those things. Like, for me, I always identified, as much as people say, like, Han Solo is the coolest character, I love Lando Calrissian. Luke has always been my favorite character. You know, the Jedi, the hero of the Republic, like, always the good guy through and through. And, like, Anakin Skywalker was always someone, just because I knew the downfall, it was hard for me to really identify with him. Whereas, like, Luke was always someone I identify with, like, the good guy all the way through and through. And seeing the beginning of the resistance, the fact that they have a ridiculous amount of thermal detonators as the beginning, that's something you should read the book for to find out how they get that. But just to see that, like, Nine Nub shows up, Admiral Akbar showed up, like, the beginning of that resistance is really probably my favorite part of the book. Just because I'm like, oh, I know what goes next, and I want to hear more about it. And so that was probably my favorite part of this, just because it's the very end. And you knew it was getting to that. You knew something had to happen to push Leia to join, you know, to start the resistance. And sure enough, that's where this comes from. And I think it was probably this scene, as well as, like, the undertones of the First Order, and at least the political space, is probably what really is what Rian Johnson had input on for episode 8. Because I feel like, you know, without getting into any of the leaked information about episode 8, I feel like this is really supposed to set up what we know about the resistance. So if you are a big fan of Star Wars, and even if you're not, and you're like, haven't really read any of the books, this would be a book you can literally jump into, read, and say, like, okay, I've seen The Force Awakens, now I know a little bit more going into episode 8, and this is probably the book to read. And this really sets that up well.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing, that this is a Star Wars book for people who don't read Star Wars books. Like, this is the one you gotta read. Especially if you're, like, a Leia fan and have just, like... Because, yeah, Star Wars books aren't the easiest to get into, I don't think. But, you know, this
even
one
even if you're not a Leia fan. Yeah, even if you're not a Leia fan, this is just a really good book. Like I said, it let us see where Luke, Ben, you know, in passing, like, you know, one of Donnie's favorite parts is about Han Solo. It's literally like he leaves his socks everywhere. You know, another thing that's very popular, like I said, is, you know, Leia talking about Han, you know, watching out for Luke the days after the Death Star destruction. You know, she slowly watched Luke overcome his grief for Obi-Wan, his aunt and uncle, while learning about gunnery, ship repair, and countless other things from Han. The sarcasm and wit Han used, this guy's just concerned for him. Like, that's an exact quote. I pulled it up really quick. But it's one of those things where you get a lot of insight to some of these characters from Leia's perspective, even though they're not directly in the story, if that makes sense. So it's a really good book to kind of give you a pulse for the how the Force Awakens kind of became the way it is. You know, and it's interesting because I think we talked about Force Awakens being a movie that you kind of almost didn't need to read or to watch the first six films and jump into Force Awakens. Like, you could have probably just watched Force Awakens from the get-go because there was enough introduction to everything to where you didn't need to know all the backstory. The backstory definitely helped, but you probably didn't need to know as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So this is definitely a book to read. Obviously, if you have any other questions or any highlights from the Bloodlines that you like, guys, please let us know. Email at us, tweet at us. Come see us in Indiana. It'll be super fun. We have t-shirts and buttons and all sorts of things. And Eric is bringing Rogue Squadron and Racer and all the fun Star Wars games on N64.
Anyway, it's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be ridiculously awesome. So as always, my name is Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Michal.
Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now. Bye.